one thing that came out of reading and learning from Joseph Jaworski was a new type of leadership that's emerging in the world right now, what he calls stage 4 leadership. And it's like servant leadership, but it's serving the greater good.
Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and architect of the People Stack. My guest for this episode is Bill Fox. He is co-founder of Forward Thinking Workplaces. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Jen. Happy to be here.
I am happy and excited to chat. So let's get started right away and let's learn about Forward Thinking Workplaces. Tell us a little bit about that and also what current projects you're working on that you're most excited about.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Jen. Mm-hmm. Good question. Let me start by saying what we kind of describe ourselves now at a high level is that we're on an exploration to uncover the footprints that lead to the forward thinking human and workplace. But to tell the story, I kind of really need to kind of back up 10 years and just tell, you know, how we got here. To have a good sense of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But about 10 years ago, I was leading a corporate transformation project. And for the third time in my career, I had gotten a transformation project to a great point of success, and then something happened. In this case, a new executive showed up and all that work and went down the toilet, so to speak. And I was so frustrated that at that point. I had seen this happening at other places. It happened to me several times. I just quit my job. I said, I that's it. I'm going to have an impact on this and try and do something about it. So I quit my job without any job and set an intention to have an impact. And then life just took a different track. I said, okay, what can I do? I came up with this idea of starting an interview series called 5 Minutes to Process Improvement Success, where I'd ask people, what's their best improvement strategy? And I had never interviewed anyone like that before, so I started interviewing people I knew and had worked with, and this amazing thing started happening. They were telling me things I'd never heard them say before. They were coming with these deeper ideas of what they really do and how we could really bring about change. And it was surprising me, it was surprising them, and it was surprising people who were reading these interviews I was doing. Mm-hmm. So after 50 interviews like that, I realized it was never about process. Nobody was talking about process. And I'm thinking, what does this mean? And so I quit doing the interview series, and this conversation that was taking place was changing me from the inside out, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I set it aside till I could figure out what was next. And in between this and Forward Thinking Workplaces, I did a webinar called Are You Tired of Feeling Like an Alien in the Workplace? Mm-hmm. And so many passionate people showed up who were feeling like aliens in the workplace, who didn't want to feel like aliens anymore. And I thought, wow, you know, this is something, but I didn't know where to go with it. And it took a while for me to realize where to take it. And when I moved to Estonia 2.5 years ago, I was kind of starting all over again. And I said, okay, this is a chance to do the next generation conversation. And I came up with this idea of asking 6 basic questions. The key one is, how do we create a workplace where every voice matters, where everyone thrives and finds meaning, and change and innovation happen naturally? And I just did it as an experiment, and it took off. And so that became the Forward Thinking Workplaces website, conversation, and body of work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's excellent. That's excellent. And so you are co-founder, is that correct? Is there a partner involved in this?
Yeah, my co-partner is Mari. I met her online through an education class over 4 years ago. We started working together virtually. And she was assisting me in this work. And it's after 2 years, we said, okay, let's meet and see if we should be working together more closely. And that's when I came to Estonia and we said, yes, we need to work together more closely and built this company together.
Excellent. Very, very cool. So I love the way that you described it, from everything from the questions that you're asking, and let me see if I had this right. It's an exploration to discover the footprints that lead us to forward-thinking workplaces.
Yes.
Okay, yes. I love that. It's such a beautiful description. And again, the way that it's phrased, it does even, it just inspires you to get to that next level instead of just talking about process and all of that surface level stuff. So I absolutely love that. So the main thing that you're working on right now is this interview series?
Well, it's going beyond that now. That's sort of part of it. It's sort of, maybe 30% or 25% of what I do now. Mm-hmm. But it was about a year ago, as these interviews were surfacing, all this interesting insights and wisdom and people who were getting involved with this and the feedback we were getting, I realized, okay, I need to talk to people and communicate what I'm learning, what I'm realizing from doing this. Mm-hmm. So it was just about a year ago exactly. I said, okay, I'm going to pretend I'm going to do a TED talk. What would I say? Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a one-page description of what that talk should be. And I finished it. As soon as I finished it, Cutter came out with a call for proposals for an mm-hmm. upcoming issue on workplace transformation. And I said, great, I think this fits. And I sent it in to Cutter. They accepted it and it got published. But that was sort of an opportunity for me to kind of pull it all together and tell people what this is about and, you know, and how to move into this space, so to speak.
Okay. So what I hear you saying is essentially you have this interview series and you're still working on the interview series, but also you're working on spreading the word, communicating what you've learned through this interview series, through talks and other ways.
Right. We sort of see three components to this. And one is what we call forward thinking you. And that's really the personal change and transformation that occurred in my own journey, so to speak, as this whole adventure has taken me on. And so over the years, I've been sharing that, and that has been evolving. Okay, this is what happened to me and how I changed and how things started happening differently and change started happening around me. So we share that story and, you know, what happened and how people can start on that journey themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we've done is that there's a lot of great new ideas and wisdom and insights that come out of these interviews, and that they're rarely the same. It's always fresh and new and, you know, interesting. So we take those ideas and we put them in the format of a workshop where we can discuss them and people can learn from them. And the third part of it is the forward thinking conversation. And I guess that's maybe been the big surprise out of all this. And I think we're demonstrating in this conversation we're having with leaders, it's over 60 now from around the world, mm-hmm. that when you create a place for people to share their wisdom and come from that place and not feel judged, there's something very special. And you do it for the benefit of everyone, to elevate everyone. Something very special comes out in that conversation. And we really think that conversation can take place in the workplace. We haven't had an opportunity to do that yet, but a lot of the CEOs, or several that we've talked to and interviewed, have seen the same thing and are recommending, you know, people consider that as well.
Got it. So the three things, number one was forward thinking you. So is that you as in university or you as in YOU?
That's YOU as in me.
Okay. Okay.
Talking about them.
Got it. And then so that's number one. And then number two was essentially like the workshops.
Forward thinking workplace, where we share all the insights and wisdom, new questions, new answers that come out of these interviews.
Okay. And then the third part is essentially the conversations and moving these conversations into the workplace.
Right. We talk about creating a space for having these type of conversations to occur. We hold an intention for what we want to accomplish here. Mm-hmm. And that sort of drives the whole thing. And when we do an interview, we you know, get into a space where we're truly listening and allow that person to feel that connection and that we're truly listening and there's no judgment going on, that we're welcoming, you know, their deepest part of them.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear what you've learned, both, you know, through the interview series and through the other stuff that you're doing, Bill. So essentially kind of moving toward answering the question, what are the footprints, right? What are the footprints that lead to forward thinking workplaces? What have you learned through this venture?
Yeah. You know, it's, I would have to go through each interview individually to kind of net it out. But along the way, as I was looking, reading these interviews, I transcribe them myself. I get really close to them. I edit them. And sometimes we even dialogue with the people about, you know, the content. Mm-hmm. But I decided I wanted to highlight these insights and wisdom that were in each of these interviews. And so I started creating a presentation around each of the interviews. I call an Insight 13. Mm-hmm. And as I put that together, it was easy for us to pull out 13 nuggets of wisdom from each of the interviews.
Yeah.
And when we would put that in front of us and look at it, all of a sudden there was another message coming out that sort of was overlaying that whole interview. Like we just did one we released today on communication. We interviewed Steph Holloway from New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And she is on a mission to transform communication in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And through her interview, that whole big idea came out. And so her thing is compassionate communication. She teaches people how to, if they see it, say it and deal with things, you know, in the moment and not let it linger, and how that can work. Other interviews have, you know, ranged over a whole number of topics, servant leadership. Another one was sort of the inside out understanding of how the mind works. Mm-hmm. Another one was creating a space for the conversations. And I could just go on and on and on. But, you know, I think the big learning is having these conversations in this manner is amazing. And the way we would approach it is you can't take it all in. There's going to be a selection of these ideas that fit for each person or group or team. And really what you want to do is leverage those, but discover your own wisdom to add to it.
I love that. And so instead of even attempting to distill it all down, all of the nuggets of wisdom into one or two or three bullet points, it's just, it's there. You absorb it in what resonates with you. That's what you can learn from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. And that's definitely in line with what you were talking about of how we create these workplaces is that every voice matters and everyone thrives. And that's definitely your approach to this is definitely in alignment with that overall goal. So I definitely appreciate that piece of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, can you give us just a little bit more about the nuggets of wisdom though, you know, with the caveat being that some of this will resonate with some people, some of it won't. But just to kind of give an idea, some more examples here. So there was the example of communication and compassionate communication. Just say it, you know, if you say it compassionately, you say that hard thing and you say it compassionately, like that's sometimes exactly what we need to hear. So that definitely resonates with me because sometimes it's hard to say say the hard thing. But if you do it compassionately, it makes it so much, it increases the chances that the other person is gonna hear it, or at least you know, move the conversation forward. So I love that. What about another example? If you can think of from one of your other interviews of what the nuggets of wisdom might have been.
Yeah, I've just pulled up some of our Insight 13 presentations here, and I can list some of the titles, and we can talk about some of them that kind of you may want to explore further. Mm. But we did one interview with Gwen Kinsey. She's a transformational leader, And the big idea that came out of her interview was uncovering natural system wisdom. And this gets to including every voice and having a conversation that includes the whole and not just the parts. And when you have that type of conversation, you know, that touches everything. Another one was around the idea of thought and the human operating system. Along the way, when I was doing these interviews, I became aware of something called the three principles. I'd never heard of it, but it was sort of three principles of how our mind works. Mm-hmm. And the first time I had these principles explained to me, I had immediate shift in my mind. The noise in my mind quieted. And the whole idea was that our thought is just thought. And, you know, we control it. It comes from us, not our circumstances. Circumstances can trigger it, but, you know, we're in control of it. And with this understanding, you can become much more productive and creative because there's a lot of noise in your mind that goes away.
Yeah.
And so I was so impacted that, people were telling me, what has happened to you? You know, your creativity and productivity has just skyrocketed. And it was really that. Yeah. And I went on to interview 6 experts in this idea. And, you know, I think they're wonderful interviews and they're all different and they all give you a deeper understanding, of that whole idea. And this one I'm looking at right now was with Mara Gleason. It was her interview was How to Unleash Your Human Operating System.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that really touched me that I remember from that interview was I told her how when I started this journey 10 years ago and I started changing from the inside out, I noticed change was happening around me without me doing anything when I was in an engagement and things like that. Things were different. And I struggled to try and understand that. And I was sharing that with her. And she said, you know, that's the wonderful thing about consciousness. She said, there's really no juice for the squeeze in doing because it's just the natural flow out of consciousness. But when you have a state of being change, you know, your consciousness change and, you know, you show up differently and things around you just start happening differently.
Yeah, that's so powerful. Yes, yes. And thoughts are just thoughts. They're
yes.
Nothing more. They're nothing less. And something that I heard once that really, when I first heard it, I was like, what? I don't get that. But then I feel like this kind of stuff that we're talking about, this, you know, really approaching our thoughts more mindfully, approaching our lives more mindfully, it's a lifelong journey. And so it's like every day, it's like maybe we make a 1 millimeter shift into toward being that best version of ourselves. But the right. The thing that I really, that I heard that resonated with me was we are not our thoughts. Right? Our thoughts yes. do not define us. It's like, oh, wow. Yes, you know, so thoughts just sort of pop into our head. And you know, they're going to come and they're going to go no matter what's going on. And so really kind of connecting with that and meditating on that has helped me immensely. So that that seems relevant to what you're talking about here.
Yeah, very good.
Cool. So where can folks find these Insight 13s? If they want to take a look at these interviews and the nuggets of wisdom, what's the best place for people to go to find them?
Yeah, right now when we publish them, they're available on our website forever. The links always work. And, you know, they can find them on Twitter or on our website. We have a interview directory on our website. We do ask for an email address to get access to that directory so you can see all the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, anything we've published in the past is all freely available. And we do combine them into a book that's available of the consolidated interviews. And we have a customer client area where we have all that content, all the Insight 13 presentations that we create. And right now we're creating this new level of presentations where we look at each of the questions we ask and we're pulling out all the insights from across all the interviews and taking a look at that.
Very cool. Very cool. So what we'll do is in the show notes, we'll include a link so that folks can access that information and get and read about all of the Insight 13s and all of the nuggets of wisdom. So we'll make sure we include that link in the show notes.
Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in two shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Is leading your team like herding cats? Are you sick of making stuff up without trusted systems to guide you? Are your days filled with useless, time-sucking meetings? Join my Facebook group with other tech geeks who are coming together to build thriving, high-performing teams who don't need constant hand-holding. No HR BS, just real stories from real geeks who understand the nuances of being a techie. To join us, go to genbunk.com/Facebook. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview.
So one other thing that I wanted to ask you, Bill, with regard to the interviews is, what additional areas or voices or contexts do you want to add to this conversation so that you can learn even more?
That's a good question, Jen, and I kind of have maybe two answers to it. And when I started on this adventure, so to speak, things just started happening. And, you know, many people call it synchronicity. And I, you know, that was my first exposure to that type of thing happening. Mm-hmm. And along the way, I became aware of Joseph Jaworski and his book, Synchronicity. I read it and met him and learned from him. And I realized that was, you know, what was happening. But I think what has happened is I've learned to just let the people show up who are to be a part of this conversation. And they might show up from a book I find, a post on LinkedIn, or somebody recommends. And so I, for the most part, I don't try and target and look where I'm going to go with it, so to speak. I let it take its own life. And I guess one thing that came out of reading and learning from Joseph Jaworski was a new type of leadership that's emerging in the world right now. And he talks about what he calls stage four leadership. And it's like servant leadership, but it's serving the greater good. Mm-hmm. And he talks about if you tap into that, a message starts to flow through you and you let it lead you. And so that's pretty much where I've gotten to. And, you know, what we talk about, where it goes, I don't try and control it. I let it lead me. And, you know, and I share where it leads me and where it takes me.
Yeah, it's inspiring, it's freeing, and it's awesome to hear that you've had success with this. Because I think for a lot of people, myself included, while the idea of letting people show up, just letting it take on its own life, serving not just, you know, the immediate people around you, but serving the greater good. I love this idea of stage four leadership. All awesome, inspiring in theory, but in practice, it can be really, really hard to do and let go of, especially like for myself, as somebody who's running a company, right? Right. You know, well, where am I going to get my clients? And I got to have a plan, right? And I got to have a mission. But what I've actually found, which is relevant, I think, to what you're talking about, is that actually the more that I let go of that, that yes, it's great to have goals. It's great to have that mission and this is where I want to go. But actually, sometimes we can get too grippy on those goals. We hold on to them too much. And that actually the more that I can let go of them and just kind of let this take its, this thing, this adventure called life, to just kind of let it take its course, that everything's good. Everything works out. All the stuff that we tend to worry about, like money or stress or relationships, it actually just kind of falls into place. You know, call it wacky, call it woo-woo, call it, you know, whatever you want, but it just is. And that's just the way that it works. And I think that we can all kind of connect to those kind of experiences that we have in life.
Yeah, I like the way you said that, Jen. And I think that's so true. And I guess I've learned, the more I try and control it, the more I miss what's right in front of me. You know, that's even better. And when you let go of it, you allow space for that news things to show up.
I love that. I love that. Cool. So let's see. The other thing I wanted to talk about was crafting questions, because crafting questions, asking the right questions, asking the questions that will kind of inspire people to just kind of talk and tell their story and get those nuggets of wisdom, that can be tricky. And it's also a great leadership skill as well. You know, it's not just about answering the questions, it's about asking the right ones. So how do you go about crafting your questions? And I'm thinking specifically here, like if there's folks who are listening, who are like, yeah, I want to be a better leader and I want to ask better questions. What advice might you give them?
Yeah, there are a couple ways I approach questions now, Jen. And I guess maybe the first major way is what I learned from doing the 5 minutes to process improvement success interviews. And there I discovered having intention is very important to leading it to the right questions. And from that intention and sitting with that intention, allowing space for those questions to show up, because it's like when I had that intention to have an impact on how organizations transform, I said, okay, what do I do? And I just kept asking, what's next? What's next? And the answers would just show up. Sometimes they show up in the middle of the night, sometimes in a conversation with somebody else, but you know, things would just show up here and there, and I would record them. I learned when they show up in the middle of the night, you definitely need to write them down because you won't remember them in the morning.
Yep.
And or during a run or in the shower, what have you. Mm-hmm. And so I get most of my questions in that manner, by allowing space for them to just show up. But there are other times when I need a good question for headline or something like that. And so what I've done in that case is I kind of force myself to make a list as many as I can, sometimes 20, 30, 40, and one time even 70, and just get it down and all these variations, and going through that process, new ideas will show up, new questions. It's also very helpful to show the list to somebody else and discuss it with them and, you know, see what they get out of it. And so I do that as well.
Mm-hmm. I like that approach because it kind of gets at the, it's a balanced approach. It kind of gets to the yin and the yang of asking questions. So there's that intention piece of it, allowing the space for it, allowing those creative moments to happen because they will if you allow them to. But then also having a little bit of a process for those times when you wanna brainstorm a little bit. So would you call this listing, would this listing of 20, 30, 70, would you call it brainstorming or would you call it something else?
It's sort of like brainstorming, but it's usually painful. It's very hard to do to make that a list that long, but it really pays off, I have found. And I guess this gets at another way for coming up with questions. In our interviews, we have three questions around what are the most important questions we should be asking each other and ourselves at work.
Yeah.
And across all those interviews, 60 of them, you know, maybe in one or two instances, we've gotten a question that's the same, but everybody has a different perspective. And yes. I find, you know, having that database and repository of all those different questions is a good place to spark your creativity and come up with your own or reuse it or, you know, adjust it to your own use.
Yep. And so let's get into the tactics of this a little bit, especially the allowing space for the questions to happen. Because again, I think while people can relate to this idea and, you know, of having ideas in the shower or having ideas as you're falling asleep or waking up or whatever, or while you're on a run, sometimes it can be hard to hold on to and record when those questions pop up in your head. So for example, for the nighttime kinds of questions, do you have like a notebook or something like that on your bedside? Is that how you capture them?
Absolutely. I keep a notepad and pencil right by my bed all the time. Sometimes I'll pick up the phone and type them in, but it's usually easier to just write them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll have my iPhone with me when I go running, and I will, you know, stop and click the voice memo button and, you know, put it in there right away, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And one thing that I do, I'm a shower thinker. Oh, yes. So there's actually, I think it's called Aqua Notes. So like water notes, Aqua Notes. I found them on Amazon and their tagline is something cheesy, but it's definitely relatable. It's like, don't let those great ideas fall down the drain. And so they're not that expensive. It's basically just, it's waterproof paper. So you just stick it up with the little suction cups in the shower. And I use it all the time, like it multiple times a week, because, you know, for me, that's what I've noticed. And especially as I was starting my business, because that's the time when a lot of stuff is going on in your head and you want to capture those ideas and then have it written down, write it down and then decide later whether or not that's something you actually want to follow up on. So yeah, that's how I do it. But then I also have, like, you know, my iPhone with me all the time. And if something comes up, I'll just put a quick voice note in there or add a task to my Trello board or something like that. So it's making sure, like, you know, you have those processes in place to capture that creativity and to capture those creative moments.
I'll have to look for that.
Cool. Which one? Oh, the Aqua Notes or?
Yes.
Yeah. awesome. Cool. So let's transition, Bill, to the last question. And actually I loved what you said about when you were, you know, asking people about what questions to ask and just going through the 60 interviews, and no one really said the exact same thing when they asked the question. This is how I feel about this last question that I ask on my podcast. So it's a question that I'm going to ask you. I ask it to every single podcast guest, but I have yet to have two people say the same exact thing. So I'd love to hear what your response is to it. And that question is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your work?
I would say the biggest challenge for me, Jen, is communicating what I'm learning and experiencing so people can see it, understand it, and benefit from it as well. It's different than the way most of us have experienced life, I think. And, you know, if, as I experienced this and started changing, the people who knew me before this, and so often they'll say, what has happened to you? What is going on? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a whole new way to live your life, a whole new way to work, a whole way to give your life more meaning and be more productive, more creative, and have more control over all that. And, you know, it's a way for organizations to transform and do it naturally and, you know, just have it all blossom and elevate everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when people say, what has happened to you, I know it's going to depend on who that person is. Context matters a lot here. But what are some examples of some things that you've said in response to that?
That's a good question. The world is much different than I imagined it to be. And I've seen that we can tap into something we can't see. And it's like the intelligence in our body. You know, we don't control our heartbeat and all the millions of things that must go on inside our body, and yet it all happens naturally. And I think there's an intelligence available to us that we can tap into by slowing down and realizing it's there and for us, and we can tap into that and you know, live life a lot differently.
Mm-hmm. And a lot more less stress, more serenity, more flow. Is that something that you connect with, the idea of being in flow?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I thought of when you talked about synchronicity. I have not read that book, but I'm definitely going to check it out. In my former life, when I was an academic, one of my colleagues was very much into studying the idea of flow. You know, athletes might call it being in the zone. But we've all experienced it, whether or not we're aware of it, and whether or not we're athletes. And so, I like think thinking about it, framing it as there's an intelligence that we can tap into if we just slow down, if we can be in this state of flow, if we can be in this state of synchronicity more often, wouldn't that be awesome? It's like, yeah. This is where I choose to live, right? This is my life. And, you know, what I found is I've slowly but surely started to make, I think, some of the same mindset shifts. That's a tough one to say fast. As I've started to make these mindset shifts, that there have been people who are like, oh, what's up with that? You know, I don't get it. It's a little bit too woo-woo for me, Jen. And it's like, you know, that's cool. There's no judgment. And the people who you want to be in your life will come towards you, and the ones who don't connect with it anymore. Unfortunately, that does mean cutting some connections with people. I've definitely.
Yes. Yeah. About it. Yeah. Maybe I could share one thing if there's still time, Jen, about, I think it really started the shift for me. And that was when 9/11 was happening. I was on my way into Washington, D.C., and I was listening to it on the radio, the first plane crash. And then when I heard the second plane crashed into the towers, I realized, okay, it's a terror attack, and I'll bet Washington, D.C. is going to be hit too. So I'm going to turn around and go home back to Northern Virginia. And in the drive back, all of a sudden, I started seeing these emergency vehicles rushing into the city from all directions. And I said, wow, this world is much different now. I'm going to live my life differently. I want every day to count. And so I said to myself, I'm going to do what I really want to do. You know, my dream was to learn how to fly an airplane. And I didn't know what I was going to do with that, but I knew I wanted and needed to do that. And so I signed up for flight lessons, didn't know how I was going to pay for it, you know, whether I'd like it or what have you, but I did it. And when I get up in the air, I fell in love with the higher perspective of the world from the pilot's cockpit, because it's so much more wide open. And very early on, when I was learning how to fly, one of my first flights out of the city was to Charlottesville, Virginia. And years ago, when I was a consultant, I had done a lot of work with manufacturing companies, and a lot of them were in Charlottesville. And so I was always driving down there on these world back roads, a lot of turns, traffic lights, what have you, and it would take so long to get there. And my first trip to Charlottesville, all I saw was beautiful mountains the whole trip. And when you're driving, you couldn't even see them. And for some reason, that clicked, okay, higher perspective. That's look, it's the same. I'm going the same direction, going to the same place, but look at what you see and, you know, how you respond. Mm-hmm. And so I started sharing that experience with others by taking them on flights with me, taking a lot of pictures, and, you know, I had a website for work. I didn't tell people I was doing this, but somehow they found out. And so when I'd have a Monday morning project meeting, they'd say, well, where did you fly this weekend? And I would say, we know. They'd say, show us your pictures. And I was reluctant to do that, but I started doing it. And I realized it was starting to impact them as well. I was taking a set things in motion for when the project fell apart, you know, for me to just say, it's time to shift here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. One of my mentors talks about the 30,000 foot view. Is that about how high up you are when you can see the mountains? What's the height?
No, it was more like 3,000 feet.
3,000. Okay, so maybe there's a couple extra zeros that needs to be, but the idea still resonates, right? We could talk. You know, you could talk about
exactly.
The 10 foot view, the 100 foot view, the 300 foot view, and then maybe. So could you actually see anything from 30,000 feet? It would just be clouds, right, at that point. I don't know. I never flew a plane.
at that high, you can't really make out too much, but at 3,000 feet, you can see a lot.
Got it.
You can see a lot, and you can also take in a lot. You know, at that height from 90 miles away, you can see your destination on the horizon.
I love
so
that.
So you can, you know, up close.
Yeah, I love that sort of, and drawing the parallels. What's the parallel of a 3,000 foot view of my life, of my career, of my work, of my relationships, of my approach to pick anything, you know, to my health, to my relationships, anything. What's the equivalent of that 3,000 foot view, and where am I looking now? Maybe I'm looking 100 feet, and maybe I need to go up. I need to go up a little bit more to not only access that higher level of intelligence and appreciate it more, but just to live from a different place. That it's happier up there, right? Isn't that all what we want to do in the end is to be happier. That's for me anyway, that's the end goal.
Yeah. You know, and the way I ended up enacting that in the workplace more was taking more walks. If I got stuck with a question or, you know, needed a time out, I would take a walk. I suspect I would take, you know, 10 to 20 walks, short walks, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes throughout the day. And just to, you know, allow the answers to show up. And I solved so many problems by just taking walks and, you know, just let go of it and the answer would show up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how that works. Totally amazing. I love it. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for a wonderful conversation today, Bill. I learned a lot, and I'm going to suspect that lots of folks listening are going to learn a lot, and they're going to leave with a bunch of questions to ask themselves that hopefully will help them to live better lives. So thank you so much again for talking today.
Thank you, Jen. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you here, and excellent questions. And I really enjoyed talking with you.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Bill.